Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today for the Transgressors Memorial Service, remembering those who have transgressed against the great spirit of inclusion and must forever be cast into the abyss of dead names. Let's join Brother Andrew remembering those who we have lost.
Our first remembrance is for Marysville High School outside of Sacramento, California, where we are sad to say the Board of Trustees of Marysville Joint Unified School District have decided to act like little children and push back against Governor Gavin Newsom and the 2024 California Racial Mascot Act. That beautiful piece of legislation explicitly prohibited any schools in the state from using, quote, any derogatory Native American term as a school or athletic team name, mascot, or nickname, end quote. As you probably know, and forgive me for having to say the term out loud, the Marysville Indians, I'm sorry, were the team name and mascot for nearly 100 years. Now, it is true that MHS has complied with the law and stopped using that horrible term and related iconography, but they did so kicking and screaming like petulant toddlers. They have announced that they will not be replacing the name and mascot with anything else, which means there will be an ongoing reminder by omission of what the team was called by not calling them anything. As you know, my young wokelings, it is absolutely crucial as a part of our cultural agenda that offensive names be replaced with ones that are acceptable, at least acceptable at the moment. Without a replacement, the lack of a team name and icon will only serve to remind fans and students of what has been canceled. Like nature, the human imagination hates a vacuum. Moreover, despite complying at the most superficial level, Marysville is actively pursuing an endorsement by any federally recognized Native American tribe so that they can return to using the Indian name and images. Assembly Bill 3074 did specifically allow for this, and they've been knocking on the door of every wigwam they could find for 2 years now, with no takers. Now, obviously, we don't love the fact that any indigenous people would be allowed to degrade themselves by being mascotized by a California school under any circumstances. As always, it's our job to dictate to them what we think is offensive to them and to ban forms of cultural appropriation that offend us, not for them to decide whether they are being offended themselves. However, at least so far, none of them have consented to be degraded in this way. But how sad is it that the leaders of Marysville would be trying so hard to keep oppressing, objectifying, and demeaning any Native Americans just for the sick, twisted purpose of perpetuating white supremacy culture and treating those people as groups of mascots? We certainly wish the school would just voluntarily comply with the spirit of the law and adopt something pleasing and inoffensive to everyone by becoming, for example, the Marysville Flower Children, or the Marysville Water Lilies, or the Marysville Hemps, or the Marysville Pansies, or the Marysville Gentle Huggers, or even maybe the Marysville Little Rays of Sunshine. Why do all these sports identities have to be so fierce and aggressive? Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend.
Second, we want to highly commend Brazil for their wonderful work to preserve the government monopoly on education and to fight the forces of ignorance and religious anti-intellectualism. Last month, the Sao Paulo criminal court ruled against parents Audato and Aida Denardi and sentenced them to 50 days in prison. Their crime? Homeschooling their two daughters without using a state-approved curriculum. After withdrawing their daughters from public school in 2020 during the COVID-19 pandemic, the Denardis began homeschooling their girls and discovered serious inadequacies in what they had been taught at school and subsequently saw their scores improving under home education. However, although the Denardis are both accomplished pianists and speak multiple languages, they also made the rash and wicked decision to not include instruction in, quote, gender and sex education, and also, quote, tolerance and diversity. Now, as you all know, this is a grievous moral sin, to deprive children of their key indoctrination in basic principles of wokeness. Being able to recognize ungrammatical conjugations and errors in long division is nice, but instantly knowing a statement is racist, sexist, ageist, or ableist is absolutely essential. As we always say, it's okay if they can't read and write, as long as they can spell LGBTQIA++ and DEI. You see, in Brazil, ever since 2019, homeschooling has been in a bit of legal limbo because although the Supreme Court ruled that homeschooling was not in violation of the country's constitution, it also ordered the national legislature to regulate it, which they have not done. So the court was left with the fact that the Denardis did not use a government-approved curriculum, and they most certainly did not use one which was officially stamped rainbow-inclusive. Moreover, the judge appeared concerned about deprivation of the girls who expressed a preference for classical and religious music over the pop culture trap or sertanejo music, including an aversion for the sexually permissive lyrics it contains. When you add it all up, you can see why the judge convicted them of the crime of intellectual neglect and applied the prison sentence, even despite 3,000 pages of evidence that they had taught the girls every other academic subject and even over the recommendation by the prosecution that they be acquitted. There is still an appeal pending, and the parents have not yet been forced to serve the 50-day sentence, but we certainly hope they will be. And we hope the appellate courts will make an example of them so that all parents who have the audacity to think they can educate their own children according to the dictates of their own conscience or religion will learn their lesson. Perhaps eventually we can reestablish the same level of control over homeschooling here in the United States that we once had and better emulate the wisdom of our dear Brazilian otherin. Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend.
Finally, I want to apologize to those of you who thought that my cancellation of the FIFA World Cup 2 weeks ago was hastily or inappropriately formed. Of course, you all understood the great evil of bringing fans here only for them to discover how much better America is than their home nations, including the political danger of seeing what liberty and free enterprise can produce in contrast with the bleak, gray democratic socialism so familiar to Europeans. But since that time, there have been other developments which certainly weigh heavily in favor of realizing the World Cup does have some redeeming wokeness left in it. First, the best news we could have imagined is the fact that the U.S. men's and women's national teams will be evenly splitting their prize winnings, assuming, of course, that the women qualify for the 2027 tournament. This new revenue sharing was decided a few years ago, but it means that the $16 million the men earned for their appearance in the round of 16 will pay each team $6 million and the USA Soccer keeps its 20% or $3 million. For perspective, if the ratios from 2023 hold true next year, the women's round of 16 will only pay $2 million versus the men's $16 million. Even if the women's team manages to become champions, they will only get paid $5 or $6 million compared to the men's champions this year earning $51 million. Since it's unfair and sexist for the men to earn so much more, forcing the teams to split any earnings openly and evenly is a perfect example of socialism and gender equity in practice. FIFA may be sexist, but USA Soccer doesn't have to be. Gender equity go. Second, we were thrilled to see President, we never say his name, personally bully FIFA into letting Falaron Balogun play for USA in the round of 16 despite having received a red card in the prior match. On the surface, we cherish the man from Mar-a-Lago behaving like a petty tyrant because it validates our never-ending series of No Kings protests. However, a more subtle point here is that FIFA bent the rules for the USA, and we love that, because it helps point out that FIFA bending the rules for us is a way of reinforcing that we do not believe in the rule of law, but in the law of rulers. Our preferred system of government always allows for wise, benevolent rulers of the people to act capriciously, since they're above the law, as has happened in every place that has fully embraced progressivism, or what we used to call communism. As we preach, you must accept that your leaders know more than you do and will make decisions you are too foolish to understand, but simply must obey. Remember, we claim to resist authoritarianism even while we collectively use the mob and cancellation and bullying and reporting other people to force our ways on anyone who dares disagree with us. So when the rules get bent like Beckham, that's a good reminder that the rule makers are the ones who are smart enough to bend them. Third, we especially admire this year's inclusion of the mandatory hydration breaks 22 minutes into each half of play. This fits perfectly into our overarching agenda of making men believe that they are incapable of doing difficult things and treating them like they are children, or, better yet, women. Our entire program of gender anarchy is advanced every time we make men more effeminate and women more masculine. And what could be more effeminate than changing the entire operation of a sport's basic structure just so a few weakling participants can take a drink and feel refreshed? Declaring men to be too stupid to care for themselves physically and forcing them to take it easy because of the heat is a fantastic way to chip away at the toxic masculinity that tells men they should tough it out and push themselves to achieve and take real risks and not act like frail little wussies. When dad says rub some dirt on it and keep playing, he's teaching a boy to be a man. And when mom coddles that same boy and kisses his wound with gentle affection, she's teaching that boy to be a woman. Well, hooray for FIFA for kissing everybody's dehydrated boo-boos and gently smothering them into the curvy mold of modern feminism. The only way they might do a better job of it in 2028 is if they offer penalties for players being mean to each other and add an allotment for emotional injury timeouts. Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend.
And now, brethren, sistren, and otherin, having been cleansed of these hurtful words, give each other the holy virtue signal. and go forth and transgress no more.